Accession number 27814, Mr. David Butt, Reel 3. Now, we're talking about your time at HMS Ganges from January 1952 through to June 53. Now, we're talking really about the annex, the sort of daily routine, but we're picking in other things, but we'll come to other things. What else would you be, you know, in a typical day, would you be, what are the training sessions would you have in the annex?
You would have, apart from spending quite a lot of time with you, with your sewing and dobing and that sort of stuff, you had your drills, which would probably be in the morning. You had PE.
Now,
PE,
how fit were you when you went into the Navy, and what sort of PE, PT was there, and how did it work?
I was quite fit, because I was always, as I say, always into sport anyway. So I was reasonably fit. Some of the boys certainly weren't. And again, it was one of those areas where it was quite funny at times. I mean, you were taken into the gym and you were given these, you had these regular warm-up exercises like jumping up and down and swinging your arms and all this sort of stuff. And then you were given apparatus stuff and jumping over the box, climbing up the bars, ropes. And that started virtually straight away. And I think there was, again, partly discipline, you had to do it in a certain way, and partly to assess the fitness of the boys. I think that was it. And again, I enjoyed it, because it was just one of the things that I liked.
Did they do sort of route marches, cross-country runs, assault courses?
Yeah, well? You did. Cross-country, that was a feature of Ganges right the way through. That was a regular thing.
So what was a typical cross-country run like?
That's one thing I did hate. I always did. I hated cross country at school, and I still do. I was, you know, right through. I enjoy sprints and that sort of thing, but cross country was never my thing. So, you know, we just sort of plodded around. I can't remember how long the course was. Probably about 3 miles, 3-4 miles, I would think. Maybe longer. All weathers, of course. The weather was completely immaterial to what you did outside at the Ganges. And again, it was, you know, some boys were very good, and that's when it started to show. You know, they started to see, well, that kid's fantastic at cross country, and this one is, you know, can sprint, all this sort of thing. And because later in Ganges, you had all the competitions between the, you know, the divisions and houses.
So we'll come back to that, definitely.
So
they wouldn't send you up Laundry Hill on the normal cross country runs.
No, it was actually cross country. It was a cross country course. If I remember right, I don't think Laundry Hill became part of that. That was just part of the sort of daily routine if you were going somewhere that included Laundry Hill. Then yes, you'd probably have to double up it or whatever you were wearing, carrying. But it was Laundry Hill really was a punishment. Yeah, that was in the main camp, of course, not the annex.
We might come back to that. What about, did you have an assault course or anything like
not
that?
Not in the annex. We did at Ganges, sort of. We had a not particularly strenuous one, I think, if I recall, but there was an assault course. And, of course, we had field gun. It was the initiation into field gun.
We'll come back to that. I think. Right. Mm. So, what else in the annex? You've got PT and a drill, and obviously, you know, washing, laundry, dogging.
I can't remember whether we started any educational side in there. I don't think we did. You did it in Ganges, in the main camp. I don't think we started anything of that in the annex. It really was primarily drill. Kit and how you looked after your kit, physical training, and lectures on various things.
Now, what would the lectures be on?
I think basically just general idea of what the Navy does, and of course you had to choose a discipline to go into, so you know they would sort of go through what disciplines involved, seamen, stokers, signals, etc., etc., and they'd give you an idea of that. they would assess you for your own particular abilities.
How would they do that?
I don't know. That was sort of, they just did it. They just watched, I think. Because before we moved to the main camp, I and another boy were called in by the divisional officer and said that we would be putting you forward for a leading hand, a leading boy, when you get to Ganges. They've just assessed you on, I think, as much as anything else, on your education, your past education. Because I was told at one stage, and I can't remember who told me, that of the recruitment exam that you have to take, I was top on that whole recruitment. But that, you know, probably not surprising, because I came from a grammar school, and lots of the kids, as I say, were bored school and all sorts. But there were other grammar school boys, but they said I was top. So I think that goes towards them saying, "Oh, keep an eye on this one, you know, because you know he's got the education and you might be able to push him forward."
Now, anything else about the annex?
I don't think it's a great deal. We were marched across one particular day to look at the mast. I think it was only to look at it. I don't think we had to go up it at that stage. And they just took you into the main camp just to show you what you were going to. But I don't recall anything other than that. Well, we get food parcels, of course. Some parents used to send their kids food parcels fairly regularly, once a week, I think it was. I never got any. I don't know why. I think it was my grandmother probably thought, well, you know, Peter, uncle, got through it. So he'll get through it without food parcels. Because I refused to send him anything after him complaining about everything, you know. But yeah, that was quite an event for some kids, you know, go and collect a food parcel. And letters, some parents did write. I don't think my grandparents did, and I didn't particularly want letters anyway. I couldn't really see the point. It just makes you more homesick if you get a letter than when you forget about it, if you otherwise. But there were boys that really were homesick.
Now, tell me about that. How bad was homesickness for you? How bad was it for some others?
For me, not too bad. You missed some of the comforts of home. You missed your friends that you left behind. And you missed being able to do what you wanted, you know, out of school hours sort of thing. But family-wise, I don't think that was a particular problem for me. You know, I got on fine with my grandparents and the rest of the family, but I suppose with the background of how it all developed, I wasn't so close-knit maybe as some kids were with their parents. And some of them did suffer, and they would burst into tears, you know, without a doubt, and they would be very tearful on occasions. In general, they were just told to snap out of it. They didn't really get a lot of sympathy by anybody. But yeah, I mean, some did suffer, I think, quite a lot, particularly in those first 5 weeks.
Now, when you moved into the main camp, what was, you know, what was that like? What was the routine like there, daily routine like that?
Well, the daily routine there was involved very much with, apart from you had the same things. So first of all, swimming test.
Tell me about the swimming test.
Swimming test, you had to swim a length of the Ganges baths and tread water for 3 minutes in a canvas duck suit. Now, at that stage, I couldn't swim. When I joined the Navy, I couldn't swim. I was put off swimming at school, at primary school, if I remember right, because we were taken to a swimming bath and told to jump off the top board. You know, the first time he's ever been to a swimming bath, I think, you know. And that finished me with swimming. I didn't want to know. So I couldn't swim when I joined Ganges, but you had to be able to swim. You had to pass a test. So anyone that couldn't swim, couldn't pass that test to start with, it was backward swimming. And again, that was my first few weeks at the main camp. I was up at 5:30 in the morning, down the swimming baths and an hour's lesson.
Now, what were the lessons like? Because they're not famously sympathetic swimming instructors.
No, it's the same sort of thing, really. I mean, you had to do exercises you had to lay on a bench and do your actions for a start. So they taught you how to swim out of the water, and then you were told to jump in and swim. And of course, it just depended how long you could manage to. I mean, I think you learned to actually swim fairly quickly. You didn't learn to trust going into the deep end, or the stamina part of it, or treading water for 3 minutes, because basically you didn't want to do it. I think that's what it was. But you know, in the end, you thought, "Well, I've had enough of this. I'm not getting up at this time of the morning to go swimming." And you learnt it, and you did the test, and you passed it. I don't think anybody ever didn't pass the swimming test. I think everybody did. So for the first few weeks, I don't think it was very long. It was probably 3 or 4 weeks at the most. That was the start in the morning. But generally, I think it was a 6:30 start. And again, it could be dobie straight away. It could be shower straight away. It could be, I think, a run. I think we did have to go on a run sometimes. Not cross-country necessarily, but just a short run. All before breakfast. Of course, you had to sort out your kit, tidy up your kit, make up your bed, and that was critical. Your bed had to be perfect. All your blankets and everything came off.
Is this prepared? Would they be inspected? Kit inspection?
Oh, yeah.
They call it the army.
Oh,
tell me how you prepared for that. That's a good.
At Ganges, the kit inspection was one of the worst possible things you had, because not only did it have to be immaculate the way you laid it out, and apart from the blankets, sheets, pillow, and that, it all had to be folded in a certain manner, and it had to be perfect in the pile. Your kit, every single item of your kit that could be rolled had to be rolled and tied and set out in a set pattern from your blankets down the bed.
Did you have a picture or something to show you what the pattern was to work off, or did you just show you and you were expecting?
I think I just showed you. They said you'll put that there, that there, that there. They probably did, took one kit and said that's it, and that's the way you've got to do it. So that was one part of it. It had to be immaculate the way it was laid out. The other part of it was it had to be spotlessly clean as well. And at the inspection was, they would look at it. If they didn't like the way it was laid out, it would be just thrown all over the place, you know, do it again. If it was perfectly laid out, they'd start pulling bits out and unwrapping them to see whether it was clean or not. They love to look in the pockets of your suit or your shirt or something like that to see if there was. Because at Ganges, you were allowed to smoke if you could afford to smoke. I mean, it was 1 and 6 a day we had, I think, when we started. And there was always the odd kid that would stick a dog in his pocket, of course, you know, for later. And invariably never got the last shreds of tobacco out. So they had, that was one of their main inspection areas, bits of tobacco in the pockets, you know, this sort of thing. And again, it was, you clean it, dope it all over again, lay it out all over again. And they had separate inspections for the ones that didn't pass.
Well, they tip it up? I mean, in the army, they just tip the bed up or throw it out the window. I mean, was it that bad, or was it?
I don't recall them ever tipping the bed up. No, they would throw the kit around. I don't think they ever threw lockers about, or anything like that, tipped them over. To be honest, I mean, what you see on that programme, I think that goes over the top. I mean, obviously it happened on occasions, and depending on the instructors and that, you know, some were far worse than others, so it just depends on who you had. But it did have to be immaculate, the whole mess deck, and it wasn't only a kit inspection, it was a mess inspection at the same time. And it was
now, how would you clean the room ready for inspection?
You had to clean every single item, and this wasn't just Ganges, this was right through the Navy. I mean, you had to clean every single possible item that could be cleaned, really.
Now, how far did the floor?
Highly polished.
Well, they're still using bumpers.
Yeah, they had the bumpers.
Explain what they are. People don't know what they are now because you don't have them now.
Well, I mean, mainly it was the manual bumper was just a big mop with sort of cloth on it rather than a broom. And you just pushed it up and down. I think they did have the electric ones, the rotary ones, but I think it was probably only one of those which you'd never finish, if you only had one of those, so you had to do most of it with a bumper. On the bit I referred to before where it was a sort of seating area, and I think...
This is your recreation
area. Yeah, sort of, and I think you could make a cup of tea or something, if I remember right, but not as a general rule. It was on the odd occasion when you were given a make and mend. And that was a timber... rough timber floor which you had to scrub with Teapol was the Navy liquid soap. Good stuff, very good stuff. They also had I forget what it was called, something like a resin which was a granules, but it was like a bleach and it was vicious stuff, but it didn't get a floor clean because I had to use that later on in the Navy, which we'll come to. So you had to scrub all that. Anything that was in the mess had to be spotless.
Even the stove, if you had a stove, was it that far?
It was we had the polished, the black-leaded polished stove and chrome, I think it was chrome trimmings on it, which had to be highly washed. I do have a photo somewhere of the mess.
We'll perhaps ask you for a copy of that later, and if they want to look in the file, they'll find that.
Yeah, it's a picture of the mess on rounds day, on the inspection day, and you can see the highly polished state of it. So realistically, and as I say, not just at Ganges, right throughout the Navy, you had these mess deck rounds.
Now, how did you take to it? They call it bull, spit and polish, whatever you like.
Oh, it's bull,
How did you take to it?
Because it was eventually done as a competition between messes, and you did have, I think at Ganges you had a cake for the best mess, or this, it was... that was something to be... not to be sneezed at if you got a cake, you treat it as bull, you thought it was unnecessary, but it became a ritual because you had to do it every week anyway, and it became a sense of pride if you could get it to that stage. There were always the odd boys that couldn't accept this sort of thing, and like with kit cleanliness, I remember at Ganges there was one boy, and we everybody felt sorry for him because he wasn't a rebel, he was just one of these kids that couldn't do things properly, and I remember him sitting in a dustbin on a table, and the instructor said to him, "You will sit there, you will recite, I am shit, my kit is shit, and this is the place for me." And he had to sit there and say that for about an hour. He was in complete tears, all the time in tears. But he said he wasn't a rebel, he was just one of these kids that just couldn't seem to be able to get his kit clean when he washed it. He couldn't lay it out properly. I think eventually he did. I don't think that made the slightest difference, to be honest.
You don't think that helped?
Oh, I don't think it helped him. Oh, no. I don't think it did. It just upset him, and he went into his shell for some time. But that was the sort of thing they would do to make an example. They would make an example of the individual on certain things, and in other aspects, if an individual did something, they would make an example of the class. They would send everybody out on the playground with rifles above their head, running around for whatever time, or just standing still with a rifle out in front of you, this sort of thing. And again, you had, apart from the kit inspections in the mess, you had the kit inspection when you had it on. You had to fall in after breakfast. After you'd been breakfast, you came back to the mess, and you, whatever the dress of the day was, you may have changed before or after breakfast, depending. And then you'd have to fall in outside, and you'd have a kit inspection of what you were wearing. And
what was that like?
Yeah, I mean, that's where you'd get some of these bullying tactics, quite nasty. I mean, the cap has a very hard rim, and you know, you'd get a kid that wouldn't have it on straight, and the instructor would come along and he'd tip it forward on the bridge of his nose and go bang. Just like that, you know, and it's enough to make your nose bleed, you know. And but that was their idea of, you know, teaching you to put the cap on straight. It possibly did, because it was bloody painful, but it was unnecessary, really. And again, it was certain instructors that would do it, not all. And we had. Most of our time at Ganges, we had, funnily enough, a leading three-badge leading signalman. Fantastic fella. He actually was in the leading line of Churchill's funeral with the carriage, pulling the carriage. He had a massive great beard, one of these real naval beards. He was big, fantastic sort of bloke. He was strict, but he always tempered it with a bit of sense, you know, and it was quite comical. One night, we were all in bed. The instructors and that used to have their various do's in the mess, and they had a dance one night where they used to invite girls from Ipswich and places. And we were all in bed, fast asleep one night, and about 1 o'clock in the morning, door bangs open. It's him. Big tray jellies. They used to put jellies in paper, little paper trays. You know, jellies all round. He was completely drunk. You know, jellies all round. And some kids would say, "Jelly? What are you talking about? Jellies all round?" And he used to go, "Boy, have a jelly, have a jelly." Some kids would take a jelly. Others would say, "I don't want a jelly." So he'd stick it under your pillow. You know, and you wake up in the morning with a bloody congealed mess of jelly under your pillow. You know, so. It was your job to clean it all up, of course. But, I mean, he did actually apologise, this fella, you know.
What was he like generally? I mean, was he just your signal instructor, or was he generally...?
No, he was the mess instructor.
What was he like? A bit more about him. He sounds interesting.
He was a real naval character, I think you could put it that way. He had vast experience. So he was three badges. He must have been about 35, something like that. He had vast experience in the Navy. I guess he would have been in the war. He didn't tell you much about the war. Then you probably found with, you know, a lot of my friends from the RNA that they don't tell you anything about the war unless you ask them. You know, so they didn't tell you much. But he just used to tell us sort of naval stories and that. But he was friendly. That was the main thing from our point of view. He was friendly, whereas a lot of them weren't. They were pure instructors, and that was it. I mean, they were only sent to Ganges as an instructor. Funnily enough, my uncle came back to Ganges as an instructor when he was a chief, because he stayed in 10 years longer than I did. And he loved it. You know, I mean, he loved the Navy through and through after he'd that first 5 weeks. But some instructors were very good, and they were strict and tempered it with a bit of common sense and understanding, if you like. Others were, they just wanted to be bullies, basically. And some of them went a bit too far, and I think they were actually removed, if they did. Not that kids complain. I don't think kids ever complained. It's just that they were seen by others. Attention to whatever they were doing, and just reported, and then they were either warned or they were just removed straight away. But no, he was just a character, put it that way. And he would just chat to you, and he would be, you know, when he lights out, this sort of thing, it wouldn't be a sort of lights out or else. It was okay, lads, you know, it's time, get your lights out, get in bed, and that's it.
And was he in a room at the end of your mess?
They had a room at the end of the mess, yes. They weren't always there, I don't think, every night, if I recall. They might have been, yeah, I think possibly they were, but because they came and went during the evening, you didn't always know whether they were there or not.
And you wouldn't have these boy instructors there, instructor boys there, once you got out of the annex?
Not in the main annex, because we had the leading boys and the petty officer boys. I was a leading boy, so you were responsible for the mess.
Now, tell me, well, what was your job as... You were a leading boy.
I was a leading boy, yeah. Basically, my function was to keep control in the mess when the instructor's not there. And there's only two of you. And you control your class, marching backwards and forwards to classes, or to swimming, or to sports, or wherever you're going. You always marched everywhere. Nobody sauntered around the place. You weren't allowed to go on the playground at all unless you've been marched. And it was general discipline, keep the discipline in the class in the absence of an instructor.
Now, could you do that? I mean, yeah. Not everyone can do that straight off. You're just a young lad, 16.
Yeah, I could, because I think we had a pretty good class generally. I think most of them, they didn't want to kick against it. Oh, you had the odd occasion where they wanted to play up. And you just had to do your best to get them back in line. I don't think I ever had any trouble, to be honest. The other boy did do a bit, because he was a bit, I suppose you could say, wimpish. He came across like that, a bit wimpish. Because I was also guard commander for the divisional. You have a divisional guard on a Sunday for the main parade, and you have to do it for a week. I think each class or group of classes had to do it for a week, and they chose a divisional commander. You had to be with a sword, you know, in front. And the way it was between me and the other boy, and what they did was they took you into the parade hall, Nelson Hall, on the other side of the parade ground. And they stood the class at one end, and then us two had to go to the very far end and shout out orders. And then the boys were asked what they could hear, who they could hear. And funnily enough, I mean, I'm normally fairly quietly spoken and get ticked off by my wife quite frequently for not speaking up loud enough. But I was louder than him, because he just couldn't seem to muster that sort of, you know, authority at all. He just couldn't shout, you know, an order. He sort of spoke it, if you like. So I ended up as guard commander for that. I've got a picture of that as well somewhere.